Hi, welcome to Mixed Identity, the podcast where I, your host, Heather Puri, interview people who have more than one identity, whether that's multiracial, multi-ethnic, or other layered identity. We listen to their experience and I capture their stories and share it with the world. Today we have a great guest, Mel A., who is of Italian and Hispanic descent, and just a really amazing woman who also happens to be my sister-in-law. So get ready for that. I'm just going to chat with you for a few seconds about an experience I had this past weekend. I had the really great opportunity of taking a moccasin making class with some amazing women, and it was through the Sea Alaska Heritage Institute. So the only way that you could be part of this class is if you were a descendant or attached to Sea Alaska in any way, which means you have come from an Alaskan tribe of some sort. So it's complicated, the whole corporations and in Alaska, which is different than what the indigenous native people have in the lower 48. But just background, everyone in this class comes from some Alaska native descent. And it was just interesting. It was a 4-day class. I got done in 3 days, but I just got to sit and chat with very lovely ladies. But it was just interesting. And I didn't know how to say, I tried to verbalize this, but to these women, they are, according to the federal government, not recognized as Native American people. And one of the women who was just so sweet, and we're related through blood, because pretty much if you're a Tsimshian, you're somehow related, at least the Alaska part. Not so sure about the BC part. Maybe there are some Tsimshians I'm not closely related to by either marriage or blood on that side. But she is older than me, between the age of my mother and I. And her kids are a little younger than I am. And she just was very, she verbalized her wish to be half. I was talking about my mother and that. And it was her great-grandmother who was full-blooded, and she talked about this a lot, and I realized there's just this desire, and I have it too. So that's part of like one of the things that I think about is this journey to my identity, is that for a lot of the time, like, I really held on to my blood quantum as a way of identifying. So one of the other women I was sitting with was like, yeah, my, you know, my mom had a card, you know, and I was like, yeah, you know, I have one of those cards. And I used to be very proud of that card that says, you know, it says TSM for Tsimshian, and it says 1/4. And the federal government recognized me. And as a younger individual, I really held on to that. And I think I held on to that because I am received as white. So it was like my proof. It was my proof that I was Native. And then it just, it isn't, it has changed for me. I don't feel that at all. I feel that blood quantum is a form of genocide, and that part of it, really, there's a podcast called All My Relations that talks about this and about moving away from blood quantum to kinship. And there are lots of tribes that do this, that basically if you're on the rolls, you can prove that your family, like, you descended from someone on the original rolls, but then you go back, and it's such a complicated thing. And this being Native, and that I don't want to participate in that anymore. And just, I was trying to say, like, you know your family and you can learn more. Like, you know who those people are and you can turn to your communities. And we're just so lucky to have Sea Alaska Heritage Institute to teach us skills and have provide classes and information in those ways for those of us who may not have a connection with our family. And I just thought about how grateful, and why I identify as a Tsimshian woman is because my mother and her mother and her Auntie Ethel made sure that I knew I was Tsimshian. And my other aunties too. I remember I have an Auntie Theo who sat me down once. We were sitting around a fire pit on Metlakatla in Alaska, and she was just like, don't you ever let anyone tell you you're not Native American. Like you're not Tsimshian. She didn't say Native American. Like, you are Tsimshian, and don't let anyone ever tell you you're not. And like, that stuck with me. So it's my, these women in my family who instilled this identity in me. And I'm so grateful for that, because not all people of Indigenous descent were that comfortable with it. And that's this woman that I talked to, who was just like, oh, I wish I was half. I wish I was Nor. She knows a lot about her. She's like Norwegian, and she's Filipino, and she's Tsimshian, and maybe Tlingit, and she doesn't know exactly, but she has this mixed identity. And because she was taught about her Norwegian self and her Norwegian identity, like, that's what she knows. And she knows cool things, you know, but she, even at this age, can go and I think that we as Tsimshian people, for our fellow Tsimshians, should be welcome and opening. Like, I've been sharing even on a Facebook Tsimshian culture site about what I've been learning, and I've had the daughter of the chief of the tribe that I belong to, the Gitlan tribe, reach out to me and was like, oh, we're looking for people from Alaska, the Alaska community, to come feast with us. And so just this openness, and it's hard too, because then you have people who want to claim it who don't have that right. You know, there is, and in this podcast you'll hear Mel A talk about, it's not cool to be Mexican, where it is cool to be Indigenous or Native American right now. And so it's just an interesting juggle of like, how do we maintain our culture and embrace those whose family had to let it go, and how, it's just this juggle. I think about it all the time of like, how do we keep what we have sacred and don't give it out freely to everyone and let the sacred become less, but how do we also embrace those of our family who have assimilated, because that was safety. So, yeah, those are just my thoughts. And so Mel A talks to us about that as well. And how she recognizes, and I don't know, you'll listen to it. It's a great thing after these commercial breaks, and I will talk to you later. All right. Hi, welcome to the podcast where I, your host Heather Puri, interview people who have multiracial or multi-ethnic or just in general multi-layered identity, as their stories are super interesting. Today my guest is Mel A, who is also a podcast host and an amazing woman, and she makes really cool costumes, and she's my sister-in-law. So I'd love her to say hello right now to us. You can hear her voice. And then we'll start with asking the question, Mel A, how do you identify, yourself?
Well, hi everybody. I identify as a female Latina who's loud. It's Slytherin, which was actually the hardest thing I've ever had to, come to terms with. If you read Harry Potter.
I'm totally Slytherin too.
Huh?
I am a Slytherin too. Yeah. And I was pretty sure.
Well, I had the first time. Okay. So obviously I'm a gigantic nerd. And the first time I took the Pottermore test, they sorted me into Ravenclaw. And I'm like, everything I knew about myself has been confirmed. And then they redid everything and they redid the questions to apparently make it more accurate so you couldn't game the system. And it sorted me into Slytherin. And I had a little bit of an identity crisis. I'm like, oh my gosh, the founder is a racist. What do I do? And then Lin-Manuel Miranda tweeted out that he was also sorted into Slytherin. And I'm like, he's got a heart of gold and he's like amazing. So I'm good. I just will use my powers for good.
Yeah. You're within good company. So
that's I think I didn't even know he was racist. I guess I'm not in depth in the Harry Potter, but I worked with this woman who was like, what is your house? I was like, I'm not that nerdy, but I will go find out for you because I want to know. And I was pretty sure I'd be Slytherin.
Like, pure use your blood, power for only good. People who come from magical families can what he wanted in his house. It was all about like purity politics, you know? And so that's what his house is founded on. And so, and I mean, it's obviously it's a children's book and it's fiction, but it still was, that's kind of how we always talk about it as. And so I had a little bit of a problem with that one.
That's good. Well, you know, not technically being pure bloods ourselves. So you identify as a Latina. Can we talk that like I always knew. Can you talk about your progression? Because I feel like when I first met you, that's like I feel like I've seen you grow into that identity.
Sure.
But maybe yeah. I'm just looking in from the outside. But I'd love you to talk about like how you came to
that identity. Well, it's kind of weird. So I'm a quarter because people always want to ask. They feel like, first of all, don't ask people how much. But for the sake of like this podcast, I'm volunteering it, so it's fine. And it's relevant to our story. So my dad he's Mexican mixed with, we actually don't know because his dad left, but white. and so I always grew up that was just part of him. And then my mom and him divorced. And then my mom married a Mexican man. And he tried to take over our identities in the sense that started convincing us that we were half, like trying to erase my dad and all that kind of stuff, which really messes with you. And I was pretty young when they got together. And so it wasn't until I was probably 18 when I reconnected with my dad's side of the family that I realized, like, I'd already struggled with claiming that part of my identity, but then finding out I had quote unquote less of a claim on it was like, I think that's when you guys met me. It was when I was trying to reel of how do I fit into this, because I claimed it and do I still get to claim it? And you know, yeah. like kind of yeah. going that whole struggle of, it's pretty messed up. And if you couldn't tell, my stepfather was not the nicest of men, but you know, and even yeah. like saying that, you feel kind of like, can I say that? Like, am I like, perpetuating bad stereotypes by saying that he wasn't good, but he was Mexican. Do you know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
there's
yeah.
all those layers that you kind of have to like sift through. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I was just listening to people complain about, Asian people complain about Andrew Yang and, and they were like, well, that's like when you start to get more representation, like you get to have bad ones too. Like yeah. there are, so no, I think, totally. So I know exactly what you're talking about, because you don't want to perpetuate stereotypes of, you know, having, because they're just, yeah, no, I agree. Because but you can't say it because it's also true. It's also true and it's your story, right?
Right.
It's your story.
Yeah. And so I think part of what helped me grow, not really grow, but like claim that back, was actually losing my dad. We had reconnected and then I kind of lost him subtly and tragically, and then trying to reel with embracing him for who he was in his entirety. And you can't do that without embracing his heritage, which is kind of interesting. And I always, you know, speaking of representation matters, I think what helped me the most with that was the movie, The Book of Life. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but like,
yeah,
I love it. I love it. Well, because I remember sitting in the theater and, you know, when you have loss, a lot of people don't like, they're like, oh, it gets easier. And you're like, no, it really doesn't. And I always tell people, I'm like, that hurt never goes away. You just kind of make room for it in your life. And it's kind of like a bruise. You get used to it. It's always there, but then sometimes you'll touch it. And that movie was like the first thing I sat there, because it kind of, I mean, Del Toro did it, so it embraces the Mexican culture and everything and the beauty. And it was just, it was like, okay, like the end of the movie that always makes me cry, it says, real love, the really, really good kind, never dies. And having watched that recently, I was in the theater sobbing, and my poor husband did not know what to do. He's like, I think she's broken. And I'm just like, it's so beautiful. You do know what I mean? Because it was like everything kind of culminating into one. And so it was kind of like, okay, cool. I'm going to be able to learn about my culture, and it is my culture. But I think the hardest thing for me was saying, like, learning when to step back, if that makes sense, and realize that I do have a claim on it, but that doesn't necessarily mean because of how essentially the next, you know, the question that you lead to is because I'm this color of paper.
Yes. Yeah. We're about the same color, so.
Yeah, no, I'm not. I'm not in any way. Like, I always show people a picture of my sister who is, we have the same biological dad, and she is a taller, browner version. We look exactly the same, except for she's 4 inches taller than me. And it's brown. And so when she tells people she's Mexican, they don't question her.
Yeah.
And with me.
Oh, I was talking that you and I are the same color.
Yeah. Like, yeah, sorry. Yeah. And, but we get the same, you know, like people are like, oh. And one thing I think might be different from Native, you know, from the Simpson to the Mexican is I feel like it's not trendy to claim that you're Mexican. Whereas like a lot of people are like, I'm Cherokee princess. And you're like, no, you're not. Shut up.
Yeah, I know. And it's not. It's to claim that, especially, I think, where you live with your family, there is, well, there's also a lot of racism against the Native tribes that are there. But there is, like, in, you know, growing up in Southern California and Arizona, living in those places, like, the racism against Mexicans, like, it's everywhere in the world. But it's more aggressive because I think people have to deal with those people every single day, you know?
So, yeah. And so for them, it's like reinforcing stereotypes. So instead of seeing like the good, like instead of seeing them as a person who is essentially flawed or any group of people, they focus on the essentially rotten apples or the ones who aren't good humans, because guess what? They are not good humans no matter what.
Yeah.
And they just, so yeah. So like when I have coworkers who are obviously Hispanic or Mexican. And when I say I'm Mexican, they get excited because I don't have to claim it because I go my entire life as being white passing. But the fact that I choose to and I'm proud of it is something that they enjoy. And but I think alongside that, though, when we talk like issues, because I don't have to claim it, I always feel like I take a step back in certain things. Like there's certain conversations that I just don't think I should be a part of because I haven't experienced certain types of, we had that racist Joe when he wanted to be able to he wanted to be able to stop people and make sure that they were citizens by speaking English. Like I would not fall underneath that category. I will fight it, but I don't think I will sit there and like speak over people who actually experienced it.
Yeah.
Which is a tricky thing to try and have to learn to navigate, you know, like, ooh, is this? No. Okay. You know, or amplifying voices that.
Yeah. And I think that's extra hard for you and me. I'm not saying, but you in general, like you said it in the beginning, you're loud and you, you're someone who is always willing to step up with your voice, which I think is great. And so being someone who that's your normal mode to also realize like, this is my place. I need to be an ally and not bringing the attention onto me. So that is a difficult thing to learn as a white
human
presenting. Yeah, a human, yes. But especially when you're talking about you know, issues for Latinx or indigenous issues, like being able to, there are some issues that I don't comprehend because I haven't lived it, but I know it's wrong.
And so the way I look at it is we're going back to Harry Potter and Slytherin. I figured since I look the way I do, I have access to some things that unfortunately, because like I, even my sister who does look is brown, won't have access to. So if I can get my foot in the door and then kick that door open so those voices can be heard and just essentially be a doorstop, you figure that's how you're helping because it's not, I guess, it's not a matter of being the loudest voice. It's just making sure the voices that need to be heard are.
Yeah.
And you're like me. We're not afraid of confrontation. We're like, what?
Yeah.
my boss, it's actually pretty funny because my boss hates confrontation. Most of my coworkers hate confrontation. And so sometimes I'll come out and I'll be like, do we need me to be confrontational on your behalf? Because I will. Just tell me what you need me to say and I will go confront them and it will be fine. Yeah. And, you know, and then they'll give me the information. They're like, no, no. Or sometimes they'll be like, okay, we need you to unleash the Kraken. And then I'm like, okay. Show me where to go.
That's great. In my working life, I've had to learn how to shut that down because it's rarely appreciated. And when I think I'm just like, you know, stepping up and voicing my mind, I am always called that as very aggressive. But you know, being a woman who's got a lot of leadership qualities. is a tough thing to be. But so I want to talk a little bit about like your sibling relationship, because you and your brother and your sister, you and your brother are white passing. Mm-hmm. Is that? Yeah. And in Sydney, not so much. But so I'm just wondering, like growing up, one of the questions I asked Paul, your husband, was if he was ever aware, like that he had, for us, it was like that mom and dad were different, you know, but mm-hmm. like that your family was different from those around you, because I don't know if you were like me, but I can count on one hand the mixed race friends that I had growing up. And I think there might have been more, but you didn't really talk about it. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just wondering, like, was there a time in your youth where you were like, oh, I'm not like the others, especially growing up in like Mormonism where everybody is white? Like, was there a time where you were like,
yeah, oh. and it's kind of different because, again, since I don't like you, when you look a certain way, so when you're like around my sister, things would never have been said that I witnessed firsthand because people thought they could say it in front of me because it was okay, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it kind of blows my mind how racist people just assume you're racist too if you look like them.
Yeah. And so, and I think part of it was, so growing up, I always went to really poor schools. So I always found that mixed races weren't that big of a deal because I always couldn't, like, I can never think of not having a friend who wasn't mixed, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I mean, our age difference is not that great, but like,
in elementary school, I spent most of my childhood in Las Vegas, but growing before we moved there, we lived in Vancouver, Washington. I went to Martin Luther King Elementary School. It was exactly what you think that picture of that race, like the racial dynamic was.
Yeah.
And so I went, and then we went to lots of our elementary schools were just because Vegas, the Las Vegas Valley is huge. And I actually grew up in North Las Vegas, which is a lot more, which is a lot poor, but still, and when with comes poverty comes higher chances of minority. Like my high school was 30% Black, 30% Hispanic, 30% white, and 10% Asian. Like it was hugely mixed. And so it was actually mm-hmm. the norm to be around mostly white passing people, you know? I did track and field. I was a distance runner. And so I was one of like 10 white passing kids on that team.
Yeah.
And so being around that is just, that was the norm. And it wasn't until I got to a pretty white college that I remember looking around and I looked at Paul when I was telling, we watched the movie Get Out, which if you have not seen it from Jordan Peele, wonderful movie. I looked at him when the main character goes into a party filled with white people. I'm like, that was what it was like for me every day at college.
Yeah, because I went there for a year, too. That's how I felt.
And, like, I felt so uncomfortable. And I'm like, I remember calling up my coach because I was friends with my coaches. And his name was Coach Germany. And he was this big Black guy. And I called him up. And I'm like, Coach Germany? And he's like, yes. I'm like, I've never seen so many white people in my whole life. I hate it. And he just, he laughed at me because for me, that was the norm. And even in mm-hmm. our neighborhoods, like, I don't want to say we were kind of, like, just barely middle class. And so we had a lot of, like, there was a lot of color in our neighborhoods. And so it just, like, to me, that was the norm. And I remember someone from college looking through my yearbook and she flat out said, I've never seen so many black people in my whole life. And I looked at her like, what's wrong with you? Like, I mean, I know she was making a statement, but I just remember looking at her like, we're not going to be friends.
Yeah, I like to say that's the point when I moved to Utah. Like, one, I realized, I guess it's simultaneously, that there were a whole lot more white people in this world than I knew about, and mm-hmm. that I was one of them. Mm-hmm. Like, that I was, that when I was in that room, even though I felt uncomfortable, nobody around me in those white spaces could tell by looking at me that I didn't belong. Like, I like to joke that it was the first time I realized I wasn't Mexican throughout my life. I mean, because where we grew up, like, almost all my friends were either Filipino or they were Mexican, and they were all Catholic. So I wanted to be Catholic. And
that's so funny. I think, and then I'm like thinking about it. I thought, I think I had a handful of white friends, but since most of what I did was sports related, cross country, we kind of had half and half, but again, like, it was just, I just saw color. Like, I just, it was black friends. And so even amongst those crowds, when I would tell people, oh, yeah, I'm Mexican, they wouldn't question me. They were like, oh, cool. And I'm like, yeah, you know, the Spanish conquistador blood is strong within my veins. Yes. And, mm-hmm. you know, and they're like, yeah, that makes sense. But even like, and it wasn't necessarily that there's like a pass or anything. It was just, like I said before, like, even now in my adulthood, it's not something I can claim. It's not trendy for me to claim, not can claim, I have to claim. And it's not trendy or beneficial for me to claim that.
Yeah.
So I, like, it was, like, they liked that they had someone who would proudly claim it when they didn't have to. And it wasn't until I got to college and, like, they, on our student profiles, they put it up that people, saw that I was a Latina, and then they started making fun of me, and that was the first time I think I actually truly faced racism to my face, because they said, oh, that's why you got in here, and, like, then that whole imposter syndrome started, because mm-hmm. do you know what I mean? Like, there's that whole, oh,
yeah, I know that so well.
Yeah, and so, like, that's why you got in here. Oh, you're a sneaky Mexican, or oh, this or that, and, like, not understanding how terrible the things that were that they were saying to me, or like, that's not a joke, that's like actually part of my heritage, and like, my grandmother is brown and faced all kinds of racism and so did my aunts and uncles and my dad, and like that, you know, and like, and so it was like reeling, and that was the first time I think I felt like, maybe I shouldn't claim this, which is really, really shitty.
Yeah, and it really is.
Sorry. Can I swear?
Oh,
on this
no,
topic?
You can absolutely swear.
Okay. I was like,
my mom
will
complain, but I do, and I do it based on my guess. I actually have one little section where I'm just like, because I personally love to swear.
It's fun. And
yeah. And so I do it depending on, like, my last guest, we didn't, because that's not the relationship we have. And the first one, because I had Paul on, and I don't swear around my brothers, right? Well, yeah. Aaron, I do, but, but my mom listened to it and she's like, oh, do you switch your language? I was like, Mom, I switch my language all the time. It's called code switching.
I switch my language all the time because I work at a school. Like, And I'm like, you know, like, when you slam your finger, I have to say mother trucker, because I'm surrounded by small children and I don't want them to go home and be like, Mrs. A just said this. Like,
yes.
Yeah. How I'm like, no, if I lose my job for swearing, I'm putting on the school mascot and run around the halls. And that's how I'm swearing. And they're like, please don't.
Yes. I've been, I've been deciding that, like, because my kids hear it sometimes, I've just decided that I tell them their grown-up words, and they can say them when they're grown up.
We kind of have something similar in our household. I say those words are, and I don't want to say grown-up words, but if you want to say those words, you have to be able to deal with the consequences of what saying those words mean. So until you're ready to deal with those consequences, I suggest you don't say them. Yeah. Although every once in a while, my son will be like, Mama, I'm so angry. Can I say a bad word? And I'm like, go for it. And then he'll say it. And it's just, I don't know why, but it's hilarious to me.
Yeah. We're going through that with Rehan right now, where he really likes to say stupid dummy, and he doesn't when he's frustrated. And I'm kind of like, well, when I'm frustrated, I say bad words. And on kids, like, no, he can't do that. And I'm like, I don't know. It's like a coping mechanism.
Yeah, it was so hard.
Yeah.
We try silly. Like, I don't know why, but like silly is what I've kind of used for my catch-all of words. Because again, like, I don't know. It's words matter. And like, as you're ever evolving, you're trying to be like, oh, I can't say like, oh, I shouldn't say that. Oh, now I feel like a real big jerk because I've been saying that the whole time. Yikes. I didn't know. I'm so sorry. I need to write 75 apology letters now.
Oh, speaking of kids, like, how are you working to, because you were like your father didn't, you were kind of an adult when he played more of a role and brought more of that identity in. How are you, what are you doing with your kids to help them with identity, continue their identification as Mexican people? Because
one of the things we do is like, it's one awesome thing about living in the Southwest is you have lots of access to the culture. And I am first teaching them, hey, this is something that we come from. And like, this is part of our heritage. But also teaching them now, like, you don't look like your friend, you know, Jesse. So even though like your friend Jesse thinks it's awesome that you guys are both Mexican, understanding that Jesse's life experience is going to be different and then listening to them when they say something different is vital, you know? And like, for me, the biggest thing for the identity is letting them embrace it, but also teaching them to listen and listen first before they have the need to have action, which I think is something I wish I would have learned younger because, you know,
I
think of something like, I have a lot of amazing Black women that I'm friends with. And I think for a lot of it, listening, like truly listening to the things that they had to say, and instead of regurgitating it, but elevating their voices, was like a huge shift in how I viewed things. Because it's really easy to be like, oh my gosh, they said that. That's amazing. I should start telling people that. But even just something as simple as citing credit and then elevating it, I want my kids to be able to learn how to do that within their own sector. But like, we do things like, we do the Dia de los Muertos celebration that they have for our cities. And
that's great.
That's fun and that's important. And I remember one year, like, because you go and then you put your name on the altar and explaining kind of how that works. And then I remember one year we had lost a frog and my little guy was like, can I please put Hopper's name on the altar? And I'm like, aww. Yeah, let's do it. And so we did it. And it's like teaching him the beauty and then just, you know, have the cultures. It helps that, you know, my husband thinks it's hilarious that I'm Mexican and he's the one who speaks Spanish. But, you know, teaching them Spanish, and which is also pretty funny because the kids at school they heard me telling someone that my dad was Mexican and they're like, why don't you speak Spanish, Mrs. A? You need to learn Spanish. And I'm like, little dude, I'm trying, but I barely speak English. You can't ask me to speak another language.
I've been thinking a lot about that because it's such for the Latinx population, speaking Spanish, especially in the United States, is such an identifier. I have often been in situations where I am identified as Latinx and I'll be asked, oh, do you speak Spanish? And I'll be like, no, I'm Native American. I'm Simpson, right? And it's always like, but it's just another colonizer's language, which, like, because then I'm thinking of, like, I'm trying to use Shmaliak words every day. And I don't want to, but that's just been my thought. And I sometimes I think, gosh, you have such racist thoughts, Heather.
Right?
Like, you shouldn't I think it's more jealousy that I don't have that.
No, right? And that absolutely makes sense. And what's funny is, since I work with so many, like, not necessarily Mexicans, but Latinos in general, like, as a whole, my coworker, she's actually, we're both mixed, and we both laugh because we're like, we're both Mexican and Italian. Woo! And, like, neither one of us speaks Spanish. And she talks about how her mom is Mexican and she only speaks Spanglish. And then we had our, the maintenance guy, the grounds guy, who's in charge of all of the groundskeeping for our school, he comes in and he's like, people speak Spanish to me and I'm Mexican, yes, but I'm like 16th generation. We don't speak Spanish. We speak English, you know? And, like, it's just interesting to see how, like, and this is something interesting, like, where the conversation goes of, should you learn Spanish or should you not learn Spanish because of everything around it? And it's just so interesting to see kind of people you would assume, like just make an assumption on if they would speak Spanish, and then the people who do, it's just, it's kind of wide and varying.
Yeah, because you could be like Paul and be pretty fluent Spanish speaker and have no Latina or Latinx. He is not Latino at all.
He's got nothing. I always tease him. I'm like, well, because we talked about how he's like first generation born off the reservation.
Yeah. And yeah.
Would not have guessed that for the freckled faced husband that I have. And it's funny too, because like when we'll have like family days or something at school where a lot of people come to eat lunch, and I have pulled my husband and I'm like, we need a translator. I need you to speak Spanish right now because we're having a gap and I want to make sure that these parents get what they need, and that also that we're giving them what they're asking for. And so he'll come in and he's like, but I'm just here to eat lunch with my son. I'm like, suck it up. This is what happens.
Yeah. He's so good at that. One of my favorite memories of Paul ever. And I think you were there. I think it was before you had kids. We all went to Disneyland together. Mm-hmm. Back when I was going to university there, and we were like trying to get on, we were getting on a ride in California Adventure, like a water ride, and this family was like super lost and like didn't know what was going on, and there was no one around speaking Spanish, and he just like steps right up and is like blah blah blah, and that is not what he sounded like. It's not blah blah blah, I just love when he stands up and does that. It just makes me like really proud of who he is, because he has so much privilege and
uses it for good.
Yeah. I actually recently had an experience when I mentioned the word privilege around some white people, and they kind of froze. And I just was like, privilege is not a bad thing. Like,
privilege just means you never had to think about it.
Yeah.
Does that make sense? That's always kind of what I describe it. I'm like, when you look in the mirror, what do you see? And if you see your personhood first, and if you don't identify with your color or something else, then that's a privilege to be able to not have that be the first identifier when people see.
Yeah. But in the same conversation with a white woman who adopted a child from South Asia, she mentioned that her daughter said the hardest part of like not being white is that someone knows something about you when they look at you, you know, like they have like all these ideas and thoughts about you just by looking at your skin color, which I think I am trying to help my kids understand that that's what's going to come to them too sometimes, since they are brown in a very white space. And so, you know, I guess we could leave Seattle, but
even if you didn't leave Seattle, like, Seattle's still one of the places that I don't want to say is understanding, because no place is understanding, but one of those places where you won't have to necessarily worry as much. I don't know.
Yeah,
like, they'll still be searched through airport security.
Yeah.
But randomly searched. But yeah, no. And on the flip side, it's interesting because since my kids, both my husband and I are perceived, we're white passing, since we're both white passing, obviously our kids are, unless it's summertime, and then those two of them tan way better than either of us. And everyone's always like, how are your kids so tan? I'm like, they're just a quarter, like half the time I say they're a quarter brown, my side, Paul's side, it's fine.
Yeah.
And but teaching them, I'm like, okay, so sometimes people react a certain way. And you've got to sometimes take a moment and think of, well, just because you didn't do something like this, depending on how they are or what type of person they are, there are plenty of times where people have assumed something else about them. So it doesn't make it necessarily right, but you can be empathetic and maybe choose to react differently.
Yeah. Yeah, I've really been working with Rehan about being, there's just like some bullying happening starting in his class, like some excluding from groups and that type of stuff. And just, and he goes, well, my friends do it. And I'm just like, just because your friends do it doesn't mean you have to. Like, we need to make sure everyone's included. Like, you don't imagine what it would feel like if you were the person being excluded. And we just met with his teacher and they said that he is really going out of his way to include like the younger kids in his play.
Doesn't that make you so proud?
I know. Like, it makes me think maybe I'm doing something okay.
Right? I had one of those, oh crap, I'm a crappy parent moments where I had to leave my school. Luckily I had a lull between my two shifts and I had to drive like a bat out of hell to my daughter's junior high and pay them money. Cause one, I work for food and nutrition. So I feel like doubly irresponsible if I don't make sure my kid has lunch money. And so as I was going up to the cashier, I was like, okay, here's my kid. I gave her her name and she's like, oh my gosh, I know her. She's so nice and so sweet. And I was like, yes, she's known for good, which I never was worried about, but it makes you feel better as a parent that you didn't raise an asshole.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because I can think of three kids at my school who I think that's and I know their parents and they're terrible.
Yeah, I don't know if it's just having toddlers, but my kids are assholes sometimes. I think it's just that their brain is not developed yet.
No, they're not fully formed little humans. Like they're still learning, and that's okay. And like, but at least when they're that age, you can just laugh and you're like, oh my gosh, would you just stop it? Like,
I'm just the nag. Like, I am like the constant nagging. We need to get dressed now. We need to do this. And we haven't even had to make like an actual school bell. Like, we can show up at school whenever we want. Like, I'm just life's going to become insane soon because we're a late family. We go to sleep late. We wake up late. But anyway, back to,
But if it makes you feel better, I have to do that with my husband. Like, get up, put on pants. Have you brushed your teeth yet? No? Let's think about that. You know what I mean? But, like, I always joke. And I'm sure many people feel this way if you're the type A person in the family, that you're a single parent of your spouse plus however many children you have. And, like, I'm that type A person where I'm like, are we there? Let's go.
I just am like, can you help me with this? Like, I don't want to be the only one yelling. I'm always the one nagging. And I've started being like Rehan turns to me and he's like, I hate you, but I love this stuff about you, but I hate you. Like, whatever you told me, I hate you for it. And I go, well, do you really hate me or what I said? Well, I hate what you said. And I was like, well, that's a better way to say that because you don't hate me. But I was like, dude, that's being a parent. Like, you're not supposed to like me. I'm supposed to make sure you follow the rules. Do you think I'm
trying to teach you how to develop into a fully functioning human?
Yeah.
It's fun for no one.
Yeah, ever. It really is not.
I looked at my husband once and I was like, why can't the easy thing and the right thing be the same thing in parenting? They never are. And so I just want it once to be the same thing.
So can I talk about your Italian side?
Sure.
And that, like, were you, because you were raised more by your mother, but she
by my white side, yeah.
Yeah.
And then
she played kind of a smaller role to your stepfather, given that relationship. But, like, how has that kind of weaved through your
Thing? Yeah. That side is really interesting, actually, because, my grandmother, she was born in Luxembourg, but they're Italian. Like, my great grandfather's name is Luigi. So, but what's interesting about that is she was born right before World War II started, and she grew up in Nazi-occupied Luxembourg. And so hearing those stories, like, I think that side might play a bigger role into my activism than my Mexican side, only because since she grew up in that era, my grandpa, like, when you grow up in an oppressive state, you kind of have to adapt. And their family adapted by my great-grandfather turning to the black market, because that's the only way you could survive, is buying and selling goods that way. And he got caught. And because he got caught, he was sent to a concentration camp. And they didn't have him, I can't remember the exact date, but he went to at least 11 different camps. And they said that the only reason that he was alive, like that they got him back alive, was because he spoke 12 languages fluently, and then 4 more conversationally. So they would just ship him around to be able to talk to people. And then when they got him back after the war, he weighed 78 pounds, and he was in the hospital for 18 months.
Oh my gosh.
And so, like, that whole side, like, so I was like, what happened when he got taken away? She's like, the neighbors shunned us. And granted, she was pretty young. She was like, she said she was 4 when they got taken away, but older. But because it's such a traumatic thing, like, you remember those traumas when you're that young, you know, bombs going off, that kind of stuff stays with you. And how, like, because, and they're like, well, they always did the excuse of, well, he didn't do it the right way. So, like, when I hear those words, especially now with, like, oh, these people have to come into the country the right way, or this or that, like, I don't necessarily identify with my Mexican side. I just think back to what my family endured, in the sense of, like, that's not okay. They're, like, just because you have this ideal of right and wrong does not mean that it's actually what is. And so I get really vocal. And, and again, on that side too, because I had a grandfather, great-grandfather who was in a concentration camp, I feel like it's kind of like that situation where it's similar but not the same. Like, I can talk about that and find a connection with some of my Jewish friends, but I would never think to be like, well, my great-grandpa went to a concentration camp, so why don't you just get over it? Which I've seen someone take that route, and I was like, oh my gosh. And so you kind of have
people.
I know. I'm like, people, I just want mediocrity from you. That's all I'm asking for. I'm not asking for excellence. I'm not asking for exemplary. I just want mediocrity. and it kind of, like, that reminds me of a conversation I had with my mom's husband, who is slowly coming around. He comes from, I should say that he grew up in, like, St. Louis, and, like, that, and he even talked about how his family was very prejudiced, very racist, and he's like, I have to work hard to, like, realize those were bad things, which I think it's good that they acknowledge that. And we had a conversation, because we definitely do not agree politically. I'm like the black sheep of my family, because I'm like, oh my gosh, I don't worship guns. Hooray. But when I was able to sit down, because he's like, well, this and this bad thing happened to me, and it was a person of color who did it. And I'm like, okay, that sucks, and I'm sorry. However, I'm going to raise you one. And I put out an example of, again, I work at a school, and without giving too much away of my students, like, because it's their stories, the ones that I worry about, and the ones that when I go on break, I think, oh, I just hope that I have one. I can say his name. I call him Pizza Skywalker, because that's what he said his new name was. And I told him I'm calling him that until I die. Are the white kids. The parents are, you know, like, the dads that I see bringing their kids in late are the white families, as opposed to my Hispanic families and my black families, who have the kids there on time, there with food. You know what I mean? Like, and that's my experience. And I'm also, based on those two things, how would you feel if I came at you and said, okay, well, then that means all white parents are bad, and every bad thing that's said about a white person is true. And I know that's, like, a real, real devil dumbed down, but sometimes you have to get to that base level. And again, because I don't look like my sister, I can have those conversations. And then they stop and they think about it. And they're like, oh.
And sometimes you have to be hyperbolic to make a point, because right. they think, oh, I'm giving you these very rational arguments of like real data that actually happened. And you just have to be like, okay, I'm going to like turn it on you. And like, I'm going to give you a real experience that I've had. Yeah. And
like,
that.
I left work crying one day because of something that happened. And I sit there and half the mediocrity comments is because I want, like, even when you have kids, I want parents to show up and just be mediocre, and I would be totally happy. And, you know, like, I remember looking at my husband and I'm like, seriously, Paul, I spent at most 3 minutes with these children and I would fight for them. Why can't their parents, you know? And a majority of those kids that I feel like that way happen to look like me. And I don't want to necessarily say white, but they look like I do, and they would yeah. pass for what I do, and their parents pass for what I do. And I feel like that when you're right, when you're being hyperbolic and you flip it and you say, okay, well, look at this, and then look at all this kind of information, and this is what I've dealt with. Or even to the fact of, like, I turned it even one step further. I'm like, the guys who have sexually harassed me and who made me feel most uncomfortable and unsafe in my life as a whole have been older white men.
Yes.
How would you feel if I came in there and I grouped you into that category where I automatically assumed you were a pervert, I automatically assumed all these things about you? And he, like, I think that's what really hit home for him. And he stopped. And, you know, like, again, you're hyperbolic. But yeah. if you do it in a way and if you have the ability to have those conversations, it's not convenient. It's not fun. But mm-hmm. I feel like that's the way I can use my privilege to help make it easier for others.
Yeah.
Is having those face-to-face conversations and being like, listen, stop being an asshole. Gosh, it's yeah. not that hard. Just judge people as people.
Yeah.
Unless you say you're a Republican, and then all bets are off. Sorry.
I fully agree with that. And I was actually like, happily surprised with Mitt Romney.
I
didn't think it was gonna happen. I want to be like, I shook that man's hand. Yeah. But then you go to all the other stuff he does and he believes in and he talked about. He's like, I love all the economic policies Trump has put in. Like, I didn't want to do this. And I'm like, oh gosh, you're still an asshole. But at least you stood up for what was right.
At least you stood up and you have a soul. It might be small and it might be itsy bitsy, but. And it might be like in the shape of the devil, but it's still a soul. And at least I know Mitt Romney knows how to read. It's like yeah. Wanda Sykes went out there and she said, you know, this isn't normal. Her whole thing she had on Netflix. And when she mm-hmm. was promoting it with Stephen Colbert, she goes, it's not normal to know I am smarter than the president of the United States. And I was like, yep, I am. I really, yep. truly am. And I don't say that lightly.
No.
My tweets have way less typos. Yes.
Can I ask you a question? Do you identify in any way as indigenous within? I've been noticing for some of my Latinx friends, mm-hmm. and they have started to identify more as indigenous than Latinx. I was just wondering how you feel about that.
Yeah, and that's a conversation that I feel like that's one where I feel like I don't, but that's
okay.
Like primarily because we've been the thing that has been passed down in my family is part of the Navajo Nation was in Mexico, which I have not Googled or researched, but like my great grandparents who immigrated from Mexico were actually like indigenous and then moved up and like they're like, oh, we're part of this tribe, and I'm like, cool. I'm not gonna say that because but
yeah
cool. So and like that's why sorry, it's going back to Pollux, where I can kind of empathize with Elizabeth Warren a little bit, because when you start looking into things and like really, really going, if someone's told you your whole life that this is actually part of your heritage and this person is there, like, I wouldn't want someone to come to me and say, you can't have this. Does that make sense? But no, again, yeah. I'm not Native. So, and I know like the current chief of the one of the Plains tribes, I'm not even going to try to attempt and get that right, is technically only a 32nd Native. Yeah. But like the problem with the blood purity essentially is because there was so much genocide, eventually there's going to be intermixing, you know? Yeah. And like, I don't know. I feel like that's where we come in, and where that weird layered thing comes in, because do I get to claim it now or do I not? Like, what's going on?
Yeah, yeah, it's really, really, I think, an interesting time to see that. And I won't get you. I was going to get you a shirt that was like Indigenous and proud, but I'll just get you like Mexican and proud.
But yeah, and like I guess the hard thing for me is Indigenous, is because when I think Indigenous, which is probably my own prejudice or my own lack of knowledge, is I think Native to that, and then I feel like I don't know. Well,
and that's valid. But what I really want to talk about, and I just want to bring a point to, because I think you've come to this throughout, like our stories of our family. And our stories of our heritage are so what makes us, right? And like you're talking about your Italian side and your is it your great-grandfather's story or your grandfather's story? Yeah, your great-grandfather's. Like it, so much of that informs who we are. And that's why like the chief of the Plains tribe, even if he's like, if you look at blood quantum and blood purity, that bullshit, that genocide, like he has kinship to that tribe in a way but then it gets all super complicated, because you have someone who might have more blood quantum but was taken from their family and so doesn't have that kinship, and so how do we balance that part of who we are? But it's so much that our stories and capturing these stories, which is one reason I like to do this podcast, is just to capture like the current stories, because our kids, because the stories of our family are what define us. And I truly believe the reason that my brothers and sisters all identify as Indigenous, Native, or Tsimshian in that group is because the through story and the story we knew growing up was of my grandmother and my great grandmother and coming across in that canoe, like wrapped in a tarp, like that's the story that defined who we are. Like, I think looking at like blood and like DNA testing is bullshit. Like,
it's dangerous
and actually very, very dangerous.
Yeah. I totally agree. And what's funny is my husband has told that story to our kids and they find kinship in it. And and as you were talking about that and you're thinking of family, because do you ever have instances where you realize, okay, I'm really not white? Yeah. And for me, it usually revolves
every around. Every day of my life in Seattle.
Right? And really, like, one thing that strikes me is food. So I mentioned before, my grandmother's Mexican. And my stepdad and his family were all Mexican. And so food is a big thing in any culture, you know. But one thing I realized is whenever I go visit my mom's sister, even the level of spice that I can handle, I'm like, oh my gosh, these people are definitely white. Because I remember even something as simple as like I took the peppercini that was in the Papa John's box and I ate it and I threw it away and they all looked at me like I had just eaten a bomb. And I'm looking at them like, okay, I grew up and you could never tell anybody when you went and visited the Mexican side that this was too hot. You shut up and you ate it. Yeah. Like my taste buds are burned off. Like I can't, like hot Cheetos aren't hot to me. And so like it's one of those instances where you're like, oh yeah, I'm definitely not white. Like I sit in their house and I'm like, Paul, we're about to get outed. And he's like, this is your family. I'm like, I know, but I feel so uncomfortable.
I felt that way when I first met like the McKinney side of my family in Iowa. Yeah. And I was sitting there and I was like, I mean, Get Out hadn't come out, but I was just like sitting there with my mom. And then my cousin's came in with her husband, who is half black and half white. They live here in Redmond. And like, you could just see to him, like everyone, and they would just like, Grandpa Paul's sister was like, oh, Aaron married a Negro. And I was like,
oh, God.
Wait, like, I know you're of a different time. Like, I know you're really old, but like,
no,
can someone just tell you we don't use that word anymore? And never. And I was like, I'm related to these people. They live on farms. They live on farms. They live on farms.
Right. And then my aunt lives in like Oxnard, California area. And so they're very much those Southern California people. And I'm just like, oh gosh, I'm so uncomfortable. Like, well, and I looked at him and Paul's like, well, what should, like, how, what, meeting them, what do I need to know about them? I'm like, they're Mormon. He's like, no. And I'm like, no, they're Mormon. And then he walked in and he saw religious paintings everywhere. He's like, oh, I get which I understand now.
there are different Mormons in this world.
And, yeah, I'm like, yeah. And he sat there and he's like, oh, okay. But yeah, and so, or like when I go and my facilities manager will come in and they'll like, because we still make food from scratch, and they'll put like a blondigas, which is a meatball soup that's amazing for, it's a Mexican dish. And we'll go in and we'll look at it and we're like, look at each other and we're like, that's not a blondigas. Mm-mm. And like, we'll make those comments, or someone's like, ooh, have these enchiladas, and I'm like, did my abuela make it? And they're like, no. And I'm like, then I'm not eating them, because she makes the best. But like, and sorry, I just thought of that, like,
food,
for the long
food
time,
in our stories, they really make
who you are.
We are
And like, even something as simple, so like my abuela, and it's hard to call her that because it wasn't until recently she embraced her Mexican heritage. For the longest time, she just was like, yes, I'm Mexican. And then that was it. Like, because of being Mexican in the Southwest, it's kind of shameful. And she doesn't speak Spanish because the great grandparents who immigrated to the U.S. didn't teach their kids to speak Spanish, because only the dirty
assimilation by safety.
Yes. Yeah, and they
equals safety.
Yep. And only the dirty Mexicans spoke Spanish, and so she doesn't, and that's terrible, and they gave up so much of their heritage. And so for her to be called abuela is like huge. We were like, we can call her that. And it was like exciting because she embraced it. And so it's so layered on.
It is. How even my
everybody's experiences are so different.
Yeah, I've even tried to get my mom to go by Jish, which is Shmaliak for like grandma. And she just, it's interesting. She's just like, no, I'm grandma, right? Like, we have daddy and dada and grandma and grandpa. And like, it is interesting how certain generations have to digest, I think, without even knowing it, like this cultural shame for who they are, even though I don't even think they can identify it that way. And I think if my mom listens to it, she's like, oh, I'll go by Jish, you know, like, but she, you can also see a little like, push back, like not even a push, just kind of like, that's not, I'm grandma. Like, that's how she identifies.
That's who
you know?
She is. And it reminded me of an article I read. I don't know if anybody knows the website. It's called Everyday Feminist. And it talked about the two differences between, I think her mom, the lady who wrote it, and I'm paraphrasing, so I could be completely wrong, but the parents came from India, and they immigrated from India. And so they didn't mind sharing all their culture, because they're like, yeah. Whereas the daughter was very protective of her culture, because she's like, you can't take this from me. You can't appropriate it. And it was just, and it was a really beautifully done thing about how one generation, you know, like how it's just different, and how she, because her parents knew, she ended it with saying her parents always knew that they would never be the same as those around them. So they were happy to share. And so she's like, whereas I had it a whole different thing. And it was just interesting how she didn't wrap it up neatly, but how like each generation saw something. And because of how they identified as a person, were able to share parts of their culture or not share parts of their culture, or, you know, hold more parts sacred. And it's just, I don't know. I find that fascinating.
It is. That's why I like these stories and these get more people on and how they. But with that, I think that's might be a good place to
wrap
I'll try
it
to
up.
Find that. Yeah, I'll try to find that. So before we do that, I would like you, so I don't forget, because I do think there's probably someone who's really into, I don't even know what fandom you're really into anymore.
All of them.
All of them. But can you tell them about your podcast?
Yeah, I do a thing, and I, with two other girlfriends, we do the Fan Pal podcast, which is basically like, if you're a nerd and you're on the internet and you do fandoms and you read fan fiction, you kind of know what I'm talking about. And it's where we kind of all get together, like going to cons, and I love cosplay, although they haven't done it in a couple years because I've been so tired. Why are children so exhausting? Why do you mean you need to eat again? I just fed you breakfast.
Oh, it's so nice to have someone to relate. The minutiae of a parent is like, I got to do this again. To sweep my floor again.
Like, right? Why? Or like even the simple thing of having to teach your kids how to wipe their own butt. No one pressed you for that. But anyways, our Fan Pals is where we just talk about all kinds of things nerdy, fandom related. If you like fandom stuff and you want to be on our podcast and talk about like your internet kind of thing, you know, we love it. We've had role players, boy bands, Hindi films, all those kinds of things that are like, we've all met and connected because of our love of nerdy things. So it's pretty awesome.
Oh, that sounds super great.
I should warn people who don't like swearing or slightly suggested content. I'm sorry, my friends are heathens. I would never, I'm lying, but you know.
Absolutely. No. So I also like to share something that I'm just really into right now that's either making me think or sparking joy. And I'd like you to share something too. But what I am really, really into right now is a podcast called All My Relations. Mm-hmm. And they have like a total of 11 episodes, and it's two Indigenous women, one from a Coast Salish tribe up here and one who's Cherokee, and they interview these amazing people within really mostly native academia and who are doing certain things. And it's been, for me, some of the episodes are so life-changing. I'm on the episode about language right now, and I am struggling with it so much because it's this discussion that you are the person on it is talking about how you cannot be Cherokee unless you speak Cherokee, and it hurts me inside, and I totally get it because your perspective changes when you speak a different language. But I'm just like, I will never be fluent in Shmaliok. I can use like five words, and like that doesn't make me any less Simsian. But then there's ones about native fashion, and I just spend like hours looking at the beating and the work that these people they talk to, and literature and poetry, and just amazing Native people doing amazing, Indigenous people doing amazing things, and just talking about very important concepts. And it's so nice, even though I'm close to Indian country and people here, I'm also in the middle of Seattle and kind of feel like I'm in this super white bubble, and it's just nice to feel like I'm staying connected to something. So that's what I am into right now is the podcast All My Relations. And what would you like to share with our
I'm trying to think. I think currently right now I'm into getting 8 hours of sleep because I have not been able to do that for the last 2 weeks. But in all seriousness, I think my husband and I just watched on Sunday, we power watched all of Lock and Key, which was on Netflix. It's a new Netflix series that came out like 2 days before, but we watched the entire episode on Sunday during the day. We had to watch it during the day because I've said this before on my cat podcast, but he is my beloved coward. He does not do scary, and so it needed to be light outside for us to watch it together.
You can't even get me to watch those scary movies, so
it's not scary. It's more suspenseful. It's beautifully like shot, and because you like film and all that kind of stuff, you might like the angles and how they do things, but like It's really great. It's based on a comic, I believe, that was put out by IDW. And yeah, so check it out if you like the spoopy things.
Well, thank you, Mel, for your time today. I really appreciate it. And I remember how much I enjoyed that you're part of my family now.
Oh, yay. Thanks for letting me ramble. I'm sorry. I'm a talker.
Oh, no, that's great. That's what podcasts are for. And your stories and your perspective is so interesting. And I love collecting it. And maybe I'll get to talk to your son and daughter one day, which I think like the next generation of mixed identity is going to be interesting as well. And but they can, I don't know, I really like
if
listening
you talk to them right
stories.
Now that one would want to tell you all about Fortnite and the other one would want to tell you all about Yuri on Ice, so
yeah.
You're right, so we'll give them a couple years.
But the second thing is, but
Yuri on Ice, oh my gosh, I introduced her to it. It's a Japanese anime and I loved it. It's actually what got me through the last test 2016 because it's just fluffy and amazing. And it's about an ice skaters. It's about ice skating. And what one reason it was so great is the actual professional ice skaters. Stefan, I forgot his last name, who's an actual professional ice skater, made a cameo in it. But they were watching it too. And so they would tweet out and be happy about watching it and all those kinds of fun things. It's delightful.
Oh, awesome. Hey, listeners, if you've made it this far, I want to ask you a favor. If you could go over to Apple Podcasts and put a review and what you think of Mixed Identity, that would be super helpful. Again, if you have any thoughts of the episode that you just heard, you can check us out at Facebook at Identity Mixed or Instagram at Identity_Mixed. And I'd love to continue this conversation. Our theme music is Ice Flow by Kevin McLeod, licensed by Creative Commons. It can be found at filmmusic.io or incomtech.com.